It's showtime.
Now it's time for the Disney View podcast. Please move across your car to make room for everyone. Our podcast will begin momentarily. Join Dave as he makes his Grand Circle tour around the Walt Disney World Resort. Dave is a dreamer and an engineer who enjoys the magic and wonder of it all, but understands Disney's place in history and respects the legacy that's been left. Come along and hear Dave's thoughts about Walt Disney World and see it through Dave's eyes.
Please stand clear of the podcaster. Por favor, manténganse alejado del David.
And now, here's your host.
Hey everyone, it's Dave. Welcome to another edition of Dave's Disney View Podcast. Well, as I like to do from time to time, I like to talk about the monorails. And today I have a guest to talk about monorails, and this is one of those cool topics that I hope you enjoy. My guest today is Kim Peterson. He's the founder and president of the Monorail Society. Kim, how are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. Thanks, Dave.
Awesome. So, I found out about your site, some number of years ago. I was really interested in the history of monorails. I'm a big fan of the Walt Disney World monorails, of course. But it's bigger than that. I was kind of fascinated when I started looking through your site that monorails are so much more. So I'm wondering if you can tell me a little bit about, start with the history of how you got interested in monorails yourself.
Well, it's sort of a similar path as yours. You got interested in monorails as a result of Disney World. Probably older than you. I'm old enough to say I used to watch Walt Disney on Sunday night, and he would come on and tell us about the latest thing in Disneyland. He was the one that got me interested in monorails way back, probably 59, when he opened up the first one. I got interested in the trains right away, and they made all kinds of sense to me. I couldn't figure out how those big trains would stick to that tiny little beam, but that was part of the mystery that got me going.
That's cool. So you started the Monorail Society to talk about the trains and some of their history and so forth. Tell us a little bit about the site.
Sure. Well, actually, I was interested in all kinds of transit for a long time, but it wasn't until 88 that I was talking to a fellow Disney fan, as a matter of fact, about the L.A. subway. They were just getting started with the system there, and he mentioned how many billions the thing was costing for just a couple of miles. And he said, for all that money they're spending, they could have monorail over the entire Los Angeles Valley. And that got me to thinking. I remembered monorails, and I went, whatever happened to monorails? And that got the wheels turning, and I decided to spend some time researching them. And I did that in 1988, and lo and behold, I found out that there are monorails being built. They're just not being built in the United States. And I thought, well, maybe there should be a group of like-minded people that like monorails. And my goal was to get 30 people together. And I made a little ad in a rail magazine, and I got my 30. And as soon as I got a website going, things really took off. We're up to over 7,000 members now.
That's pretty remarkable. And the site is monorails.org for anyone who's looking for the site. I'll put a link in my show notes page as well. While we're on the topic for a moment here, you've got a book that you put out, Monorails, Trains of the Future, Now Arriving. It looks really cool. It just went into print, if I understand correctly.
Oh, that is my baby, right? That is my pride and joy. Thanks for mentioning it. Yeah, the Monorails book is something I've been working on for, I can't believe it, 2 decades.
Wow.
I got the idea way back when that we really should have some kind of book. The last one to come out was in 1965, but I wanted something really kind of encyclopedic-like, It's got all the Disney monorails and all the monorails in Japan and around the world and the ones being built. And, of course, there's a lot of amazing history on monorails as well. I've got some amazing old pictures of monorails going back to the 1800s, if you can believe it.
That's amazing. And I noticed on the cover there, it's Monorail Lime on the cover, which is very cool.
Monorail Lime was kind enough to stop right outside the Poly so I could run around and get all the best shots. And
that's pretty awesome.
That's the one that got elected.
That's pretty cool. Now, that's neat because, monorails from throughout history. So monorails are an interesting thing because, they're really fascinating. They're very environmentally friendly. They're very efficient. They can move a lot of passengers. We were talking for a couple of minutes about how many passengers the Walt Disney World monorail moves. And it's just incredible that they haven't caught on in this country, but they have caught on in the rest of the world.
Yeah, they have. They're working very well at Disney. I mean, the Disney World, as you probably know, carries somewhere around 150,000 people a day, many times more. And something about monorail that a lot of the other transit forms can't do is they run at a 99.9% reliability, which means those trains can all be out on the track running, and you can trust them to get to the station on time. Now, of course, there's that tiny 0.1. There's occasions and the trains don't show up, but they're doing a lot better than other transit systems. And sadly, we just haven't caught on here in the United States, but there's a lot of new ones being built around the world.
That's amazing. Yeah, because you think about all the things that are happening. I'm glad to see that Seattle still has the monorail that's still running, one of the original monorails in this country.
It just went through an amazing rehabilitation a few years back. That thing is in wonderful shape. And it is the last monorail train in the world. It was actually built by the original Al Wegg Company. And for you monorail historians, you probably remember the name Al Wegg. That's the company that Walt discovered while in Germany, that built this unusual new type of monorail, and he fell in love with it right away.
That's very cool, and it is a really neat ride. I got a chance to ride it when I was out there, and I was like, I have to ride on the monorail while I'm here. There's no other choice. And it was just a really amazing experience, because that's the closest connection you can have to what was originally in Walt's head, you know, what he was thinking when he was doing it. And it's a remarkable thing. But
Exactly, and that Seattle monorail is the type of monorail that Los Angeles got very close to getting in the 60s. The Al Wegg Company went to them and offered a monorail system across the whole city. All they had to do was just provide streets, and the city said, "Nah, no thanks." So
amazing.
Just crazy.
It is crazy when you think about it. You know, you look at the congestion that Los Angeles has now, and you go, "Wow, that would have been a boon, probably."
Absolutely.
Yeah, so it's just an amazing thing that cities and, you know, do that, and communities do that, and they don't think ahead. So the history of the monorail is kind of interesting as far as Walt Disney goes. You know, it became something interesting. He really created something. As you said, it was, you know, thought more of as an amusement park thing and less as a mode of transportation. But it's his impetus in getting it. He had a grander plan than that.
Absolutely. Well, his Tomorrowland was really a forecast of the future, and he was always trying to think of things that will make life better for all of us. And we've seen that in Tomorrowland, and of course in Epcot, which came after him, but had a lot of his philosophies involved. Monorail was not put in just to be a ride. He was trying to show all sorts of folks how we could make trains real quick, get them up in the air and above traffic, and they would operate cheaper. And he was green before there was a green.
Pretty remarkable. So, you know, he had the idea. He wanted to get it going. He had talked to the Al Wegg Company about creating the monorails, and Al Wegg was a little slow on the uptake or the development along the way. And so he changed his he sort of changed direction a little bit, and that's where he turned to the infamous, I would say, Bob Gurr to help him design something different.
Right. Well, Disneyland had the unique challenges in it. It had a small area, and Walt, being the pioneer, wanted something really spectacular, and he wanted the thing to twist around like a bowl of spaghetti. So he had to make it a smaller scale, on par with the rest of the park having a lot of smaller scale stuff. But to do that, they had to change the design of Al Wegg's train. So Bob Gurr got very much involved in doing that, and he also came up with that iconic Buck Rogers look that we all love. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
And later on, the Learjet look that you see on the cover of my book, that's the monorail line that we... He basically was inspired by the Learjet, from what I understand on that. But, he had to scale down the system, and Disney sort of went on their own, much to Al Wegg's concern.
Yeah, I can imagine that Al Wegg wasn't really happy with that along the way. I'm sure that they wanted something grander, too. But, that's history as that goes.
Right, they were. It's a Bob Gerd tells a funny story about how they couldn't believe that, you know, they barely got the thing running, and then they put the vice president on it for a grand opening. So they just wouldn't do it that way. They'd rather test the thing for a half year and then get it going.
Yeah, I could understand that. That's companies for you, and, you know, testing their technology.
Yeah.
But it's amazing, you know, he got it up there and he got it running and it ran well, and it looked cool and, you know, continues to look cool. It has that sort of style to it that just blows you away. There's nothing like it. I mean, even the other monorails around the world, they don't quite have that same, I don't know, style, that same panache.
Yeah, they don't have the pizzazz of the Disney monorails, that's for sure. To Disney's credit, they did have some problems with the initial design, and they went through several Mark series, and it kept improving them to make them operate better. And, of course, they scaled them up for Disney World and got a little better at that.
Right. And the technology's improved, and the systems have improved, the safety has improved, everything, you know, kind of every time they come up with something that just moves it a step along a little bit further. You know, you look at even the controls and the things that they do now, you know, they're trying to get to a point where they've got, you know, more of an automated system. They don't, you know, they don't necessarily need a pilot, or they don't want to have a pilot at some point. And that's kind of a cool idea. Kind of takes it to that next level.
Certainly, it's a safe thing. I've been on numerous totally automated monorails. The most recent one was my wife, Carol, and I went to Korea last year for the the brand new Daegu monorail in South Korea, and it's totally automated. It's just amazing how accurate that thing can stop in the station, and the doors open up, and it's on time. It's just amazing.
That is amazing. You know, you think about that, and you go, "Wow! If Disney could do that too, that would really, you know, move the needle for them too."
Well, it's in the works.
Absolutely.
So I'm sure we'll see it before too long.
Absolutely. You know, you look at the safety procedures they have in place now with, you know, the pilot having to make sure that everything's clear. But if you don't have to have that, you know, and you have the system kind of managing itself, you could really do a lot of things with it. It's a really remarkable idea.
When I was last in Disney World, they were showing me the automation systems that they were installing and testing at the time. So
cool.
Yep.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing that. I know they've been doing some little tweaks and little things with, you know, trying to get the timing right and making sure that the monorails come on regular cycles and syncing it up with the magic band so that you know when the monorail is coming, you know, what the next one's going to be and, you know, that sort of a thing. So it's evolving the thought a little bit. It's getting closer. It's really cool.
Very cool indeed.
So Disney, obviously, you know, for years they built the original monorail line at Walt Disney World that runs around between the Transportation and Ticket Center and the Magic Kingdom in two directions, and then in 1981, before Epcot opened, they built the Epcot line to build that out there, and then after that they just stopped and never built anything else again.
Much to the frustration of those of us that like to go to Disney World on occasion, right?
Right.
Wouldn't it be nice to kind of cruise on down to the studios and on to the Animal Kingdom? Yes. You know, funny enough, I have from reliable sources, well, I think they're reliable sources, that they actually were going to expand the monorail at one time, at least as far as the studio theme park. Something came along called 9/11,
yeah.
And tourism just died at Disney World, and it got put on the back burner. And unfortunately, it's been on that back burner all those years. So, I still have high hopes that someday they decide to expand that monorail system further south.
Yeah, me too. It's funny because I know I saw a model, and I've seen pictures of the model since then. Of the monorail heading out toward the what's now, I guess it's called Disney Springs, but when it was the Disney Village Marketplace, there was a model that had the monorail heading there, and I was like, huh, interesting,
yeah.
And they never built it.
And there are maps that you can find that show the system, the later idea of going down to the Disney Studio. So I've got my own fantasy extension of the Epcot loop to pick up all that. One of these days I'm probably propose it, you know, do something with that.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have ideas, but you know, it's the big dollars it costs to put it in.
That's
probably keeping away.
That's probably true. You know, it's funny cause they keep buying up municipal buses from other cities and putting them in, and you know, they're obviously well-worn buses at that point, and you know, they're diesel mostly, and you know, they're they're costly to maintain, and they've got their own issues. So I, you know, you have to wonder where's the break-even point. I guess they can figure that out, but
you have to pay for the drivers too. One thing about the bus is it has some flexibility; they can change the routes and right. that kind of thing. But when you have main lines that you know people are going to be going on all the time, for instance, the system that's there now, it's being used
right.
quite heavily. It would be used heavily if it went to the other theme parks too. I'm sure of that.
I'm quite sure you're right, actually.
Yeah. Well, we just have to keep our fingers crossed. I know there's a lot of folks within Disney that wish they'd do it.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's funny because they made an announcement sometime last year that they were closing the Richard Petty driving experience. And yeah. They were going to use that land, and they said first they were going to make it more parking. Then they said, oh, we're going to use it as a bus depot. And I kept thinking in the back of my mind, oh, come on, monorail station, come on, you know.
Yeah, the thing about buses, you have to pay a lot of drivers for that, too, you know. And if you have an automated system, plus a bus doesn't carry as much as a monorail train.
No, that's true. Yeah, you can put a large number of passengers on a monorail train.
They come out of Epcot and then go past the Swan and Dolphin, have a station at all those Epcot hotels there.
Mm-hmm.
That would serve a lot of people. And just swing on down to the studio, which is going to have a lot of traffic when they get Star Tours Land open.
No, for sure.
Zip another, it's just a couple miles that they need to double track, maybe down there to Animal Kingdom, maybe onto the lodge. That would be great.
That would be great, and then they could probably hit one line that goes over toward where a couple of the other resorts are, because they're all in a small proximity to each other. So you can hit a couple of those in one place.
Into it.
Yeah. See, there you go. It was easy.
No problem.
Now all we need to do is get them to fund it. Yeah.
Yeah. We have it figured out, don't we?
Yeah, we've got. I've got the plan all laid out. It's perfect. Hey, if you want to talk to me, guys, you know, give me a call. I'm happy to help. I'll get Kim on the phone. We'll all figure it out. It's good.
I've got the map already on Google Earth. Just go take a look. It's all figured out.
That's the thing, isn't it? So you said you've been over, you know, you've been to several other monorails around the world. Tell me about some of the fun ones you've taken, some of the ones you really like.
There's a lot of fun ones. I guess my first major trip was to Japan in 1990. Japan, at the time, was monorail land. They have them all over the place. There's something like 7 or 8 major systems there now. And they have some unique ones where they're actually suspended from the track. So, surprisingly, it's kind of like a Peter Pan ride, you know, except you're at high speed. Very cool. Speaking of Peter Pan, did you know that's the first monorail ever built by Disney?
That's a great point, yeah, because it's hanging from a single track, isn't it?
That's one of my favorite trivia remarks. When did the first Disney monorail open? Nice. 1955.
There you go. It was with Peter Pan. Yeah, you look. If you go and you see the model for Peter Pan, you can clearly see it's a monorail if you want to see it.
Absolutely, it's a suspended monorail, right. So, but where was I? Oh, talking about Japan.
Yeah.
So, I've been on a lot of ones in Japan. I've been on the monorail in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, which was, interestingly, reverse-engineered from the blueprints of the Seattle monorail. And the Seattle monorail was an extension of what you see in Disneyland. So the Disney inspiration continues to spread throughout the world. In fact, just a week or so ago, I found out and reported on the website that Panama City will be getting an Al Waig monorail system that's actually going to cross the Panama Canal. That's going to be way cool.
Oh, that's cool. That's really cool, actually.
Yeah. And it's going to be the first system built by the Japanese company Hitachi in the Americas. So for us monorail geeks, we're very excited about that. They almost built one in Seattle, but politics got in the way.
That's sad that politics has to get in the way of fun stuff like that.
Well, as a matter of fact, I have a chapter. It's one of my favorite chapters in my book. It's called Could Have, Should Have. And it's like over 100 years of monorails that almost got built. And you just won't believe some of the systems that got close to being built.
Huh. That's really neat. Yeah, that's really interesting the way those things go. You know, sometimes things work out and sometimes it just doesn't happen. And it's, you know, the politics of it and, you know, different people in charge and whatever. I guess that's the nature of it.
And politics of building things is for just anything, not just monorails.
Nope, certainly, yeah.
We've seemed to have an unusual amount of bad luck in the United States when it comes to monorail.
That's really too bad. It's kind of sad that that happens that way, because it'd be really neat if we get a few more around.
Yeah.
I'd love that.
We can still go down to Disney. In my case, I go to Anaheim more often, and you can go to Orlando, and we'll get our fix, right?
Exactly. So that's the thing. And I love, you know, sometimes it's just the simplicity of just going out and taking the ride, right? You forget about the theme parks. You forget about anything else. You just hop on and you take the ride around, and you just enjoy it for what it's worth.
Well, you bring up a good point. That's another thing that's kind of against monorail is they're fun to ride.
Yes.
So they're not taken as seriously. You know, they're above traffic. They don't mix with street traffic and pedestrians, and you're cruising along. It's kind of like low-level flying. So, you know, it's not unusual to see kids with their face up against the window and watching everything.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. I think I'm a big kid doing that.
I was just going to say the same thing. I've got my face up against the window, too.
And I used to, before the accident, I was always the one going, hey, can I ride up front?
right.
Because back in the day, they let you ride up there with the pilot. You still can at Disneyland, but you can't at Disney World anymore.
That's right. Yeah.
So
that's a pity. That's a neat treat.
Yes, it is. It was really neat. I caught a lot of video up there, so it's on my YouTube page. I'll put a link to it out there again because it's really kind of cool. It's one of those things where you go, yeah, it's just neat to be able to watch it again and see what it looked like from the front, see the pilot's point of view.
I gotta invite you to my YouTube channel. I've got some really cool front of the monorail rides of what they look like going through cities. So
oh, cool. Got to check that out. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Definitely gotta check that out, and I'll put a link to that in my show notes page too. Man, my show notes page is gonna be really long, but with cool stuff, so it's gonna be great. I always like to put information out there for anybody that wants to follow along a little more. So I love the whole thing, and one of the things that I that was really interesting to me is I love the fact that you got a concrete beam that it's running on, especially at like Disney World and some of the other places, and yet they can switch it. They can move the concrete beam from one place to another and actually move the trains from different lines. And that just, it's one of those things that, as an engineer, you look at and you go, that's just fascinating that they can move concrete like that and actually change directions and whatnot.
Well, the newer technology ones are actually made out of steel. Some of them actually bend.
Amazing.
But most of them are segmented and kind of, move over to the other track. And the Disney doesn't make use of those so much because they have loop systems or loop lines. But when you get on the transit monorails, you're riding a line from one end to the other, and then you have to change directions. So then that's where you get your switches, so you can move over to the other side and come back the other way.
That's cool. Yeah, it just, it's one of those things that just intrigues me because it allows for a little more flexibility in the lines. And, of course, you can move trains on and off as you need to, too, and meet capacity and demands and change things around a little bit, which is always kind of cool.
You made me think of one thing, talking about the beam, too. I mean, look how small those beams are and how many people they can carry. The beauty of building a monorail is you really don't need that much material as you do for other rail systems. And you can build a track miles from where it's going to go and then truck it in and lift it up in the middle of the night, and you don't disrupt the area as much.
Disney World
was crazy in the first monorail they built. They actually built the beams in Washington and shipped them across the country on rail.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that was just wild. They decided to do their own beams for the Epcot line, and they're a little bumpier than the ones built in Washington. Let me say that.
Yeah, I would agree with you there, but it's interesting. You can still see the vestiges of the concrete facility where they built the beams. It's kind of neat. If you look at Google Earth, you can still see them on there, where the building was.
We're going to start talking about opening that yard up again, huh?
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. See, it's still there. I mean, it probably needs a little work, but we can just open it back up. See, I'm telling you, we've got this all figured out. It's all good.
Just on the ticket sales of Star Wars alone, we could build one heck of a system.
Exactly. That's what it all comes down to. It's just about, building the system. It's no big deal.
Yeah, right.
Very cool. But it's a really interesting thing. I mean, I'm one of those people who always likes to talk about the monorail. I have no issues, I can just jump into a conversation about the monorail. I'll overhear somebody just having a conversation about it, and I'll just jump in. Hey, you're talking about the monorail?
Well, I'll tell you what, Dave, you know where I am now.
Yeah, exactly. Now I know who to talk to.
You found me.
Uh-oh, look out.
I'm a geek, and it's probably worse off than you as far as monorails.
it's just one of those really neat things. I mean, that's one of the things that really drew me to Disney in the first place. I mean, there's a certain magic that goes along with all of it, a certain, sense of wonder. But it's... it's that forward thinking in the cool designs and something that's different that you don't see every day that is, you know, bigger and better than what you see in real life, I'll say.
Yeah, overall, Disney is showing the world how to be a better world, you know? Mm-hmm. It's showing how to be clean, it's showing future technology. Well, to the cast members, they're showing how to be nice. Wouldn't it be nice if we were all a little friendlier to each other, like we are when we go to Disney?
Yeah. What was that word, nice? I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
What'd you say?
No, that's very cool. You're right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, it's like, it is sort of that, in some strange, abstract way, it's sort of that prototype community that, you know, Walt had in mind.
Yeah, sure is.
You know,
sure.
It's something that you don't see every day. I mean, he had always, from what I gather, because I never met the man, obviously, but from what I gather, he always wanted to have something that was just different that you couldn't see every day. You know, something that was really unique. And so he's accomplished that to a large degree. We're talking about that in that sense.
Yeah, it's an amazing inspiration to my life, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. I kind of feel like, I never worked for Disney, but I like to think of myself kind of working directly for him, because I think he would approve of us trying to move this concept forward.
Yeah, I think you're right. I worked for the Disney company for a period of time, and it was a great experience, a lot of fun, just one of those great jobs in life. And, I look back on it now and I think to myself, you know, talking about it and kind of promoting the brand to a large degree and doing these podcasts and, you know, talking about the company really kind of it's very related. You know, you're still ambassadors for the brand in some way and doing something and, you know, kind of being positive. And it's really kind of a neat experience to be able to be involved in that way, kind of distantly.
There's not a lot of companies where you leave and you still have that good feeling about it. That's impressive.
No, it's really amazing. And when I run into somebody who's a former cast member, you know, we do the secret cast member handshake, but we all have that sort of camaraderie.
Yeah,
you know, it's like having been in a fraternity in a way, but it's better, you know, in some ways. It's because it's a very different experience because you come from all walks of life and everybody's involved, and it's very inclusive that way, where fraternities sometimes aren't. You know, so it's a little bit different. It's like it, but different.
I understand that. I'm jealous of you, actually. I have several friends that have been pilots for monorails, and I'm just insanely jealous of what they do and the life they were leading. You don't make a fortune doing it, but it's a great thing to have in your notebook. You know, something you've done.
Exactly. I wish that I could have been a pilot for the monorail. It never worked out that way for me. But, you know, I still treasure the experience as having been something really great. So it's really neat.
Well, you need to take over my job. I've had a few privileges over the years.
I can imagine you have.
Thanks to being the president.
Yeah, there's something about that sometimes, right? A few perks that go along with it.
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to pilot the Disneyland monorail, the Disney World monorail. Seattle monorail.
Oh, that's cool.
I even did one in Australia once.
Wow.
But I still have the wish to do it for a longer period of time than a couple loops around the track.
Yeah, to take it further
never
would be
enough.
You know, no, that's the thing, and that's what I come to realize, that it would never be enough. You know, I'd do it once, and I'd be like, no, I want to do it again.
Yeah.
Let me go again. That's very cool.
Because of a friend in Anaheim, we went around the track a couple times, and I was getting instructions. I'm not going to mention names. But on the third time, I said, hey, be quiet. Let's see if I can do this without you telling me the speeds. And I managed to do it right. So.
Oh, that's cool.
That was a real cool accomplishment, because that track is pretty interesting there. Up and down and around. A lot of fun.
I can imagine. That's very cool. You know, that would be a lot of fun to be able to do that. Neato. Well, Kim, it's a pleasure talking to you. This is really fun. I enjoyed talking about the monorail, and I thank you for coming on and, you know, just kind of making me smile for the day.
Great. Well, you got me all wired up. I don't think I'll sleep tonight now.
Yeah, that's the thing. I'm going to go back and watch some videos now or something.
Yeah.
You know?
Come on over to my channel.
Very cool. And the book is Monorails, Trains of the Future, Now Arriving by Kim Peterson. You can find it on monorails.org, or you can look at, I'll put some links to it in my show notes page so you can get some get directly to it if you want to purchase it. But very cool.
Thank you. Yeah, if you just look up Monorail Store, you'll find it there, and there's a couple different options for buying it, Amazon, eBay, or straight from me.
Perfect.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thank you, and I really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to be on the show with me today.
Excellent. okay, let's go ride somewhere.
All right, let's go ride. And remember, folks, if we can dream it, we can certainly do it.
And just one last request before I let you go. If you can, please support this podcast in any way you like. I have three ways of supporting me. Number one is the easiest, and it's free. Just head over to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you happen to be listening to this podcast and give me a quick review. Tell other people how great you think this podcast is, and it'll help grow the podcast. The second way is to go ahead and purchase one of the apps I have for sale over at DisneyPodcast.net or DisneyWorldPodcast.net. I create apps for iOS devices, so for Apple devices, your iPhones and your iPads, and I've got a couple that are Disney-related that you might enjoy. So take a look at those and see if any one of them might be interesting to you. And the third way is, I've recently set up a Patreon account. It's patreon.com/DisneyView. And if you like, just make a quick financial contribution. I'm happy to continue doing this regardless, but if you like the show and you'd like to contribute in some way, I'm always happy to take a small contribution. There's no requirement, I'm not asking for much, but if you do give me a contribution, I'm happy to give you a shout-out on this podcast in the future. Hey, thanks very much, and I hope you enjoy my podcast.
Thank you for tuning in to the Disney View Podcast. We hope you had a pleasant stay and arrive home safely. Please remain seated until your ride vehicle stops completely. Then, gather your personal belongings and step out onto the moving platform. And yes, I know it went by so quickly, but don't worry. One of the nice things about traveling on this podcast is that the journey is just beginning. Show notes are available on DisneyWorldPodcast.net. While there, please check out some of our affiliates. You'll also find links to Dave's iPhone and iPad apps. There's an app for pin trading, one for finding hidden Mickeys, and an app for finding and tracking pressed pennies around the Walt Disney World Resort. And you never know just what Dave is working on next. If you have questions, feel free to drop Dave an email at davesdisneyview@gmail.com. Original music you're hearing in this podcast is Oslo Doom by Gilberto Gil. Of course, this is a fan podcast and in no way affiliated with the Walt Disney Company.